How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts here on our new station, Sirius Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. We've moved from Sirius Channel 92. So if you're listening to this online because you couldn't find it on the satellite, that is the new station to tune to, Sirius Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. Of course, streaming online on the internet as well at WrestlingObserver.com. And we have so much stuff to talk about today, it's not even funny. In fact, quite frankly, we're not going to get through all of it, but we're going to try. It is SummerSlam Sunday. We've got a full lineup of the show, or at least the five matches we're aware of as of the time we're recording this update. This is a pre-taped show, so some news may break during the day, but hopefully we'll have covered most of it by the time most of you hear this. The SummerSlam lineup will kick off the show today. We're also going to talk about the other show that is going head-to-head with SummerSlam, that being UFC on Versus. We'll talk about what could end up being one of the better MMA shows of the year. Probably many of you that are wrestling fans not too excited about it. It does not have a lot of marquee names on the card, but it is looking to be a great show. There are some guys on this show that have had some fight of the night bonuses, some submission bonuses, some knockout bonuses. There may be more bonus winners on this show than any show in a long, long time. So it should be awesome. It's coming up tonight. We'll preview that as well. Plus, all of the news. Kimbo Slice debuted in boxing. He won quickly. We had a Strikeforce Challengers show on Friday night, where a former judo star, an Olympian, in fact, had her sixth fight of her career. Five fights had ended via armbar in less than a minute. Her sixth fight was Friday night. Did it end via armbar in less than a minute? We are going to tell you here on this program. We'll tell you about the WWE 12 video game roster, who is going to be making a lot of money this year from starring in that video game, and more names to be released. Talk about the fake Sin Cara from SmackDown, where they're going with that angle, or where they appear to be going. Talk about a bunch of different lawsuits, ROH TV tapings, Heath Slater charged. Well, actually, he's not charged, accused. We'll talk more about that as well. Tons of stuff coming up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And since I mentioned it before the break, and I want to make sure I clarify this, the Heath Slater story, it is very strange. What happened, and this is being reported around Atlanta, is a security guard with Allied Barton Security Services named Corrine Oliver has accused Heath Slater of grabbing her around the neck and trying to drag her into his hotel room late, I don't even know exactly what day it was, but it was over WrestleMania weekend. Apparently it was after the WrestleMania show, and she broke free, she got away. She claimed she reported it to her supervisors. They said they were going to investigate. Apparently they did not. And she has now called the police and filed a police report. And I guess as of the time we were recording this update, no charges have been filed. It is being investigated. And it's such a strange story because according to the news article here, she was working security in the hotel and she was trying to keep fans, I guess, out of the building. And for those of you that have not been around the WrestleMania hotel on WrestleMania weekend, I actually was there, believe it or not. The first night that I was in Atlanta, I actually ended up at the hotel the wrestlers were at. I didn't even know it till I got there, but I showed up and there's just wrestlers everywhere. Then the next night we moved to another hotel. But the point is, on I think Saturday and Sunday night, and Sunday in particular, you know, Saturday as well, I'm pretty sure, they locked down the hotel. I mean, no fans allowed into this hotel. So I guess maybe fans were trying to get in or whatever the case was, and she's out front or something like that. And she claimed that he grabbed her and was dragging her in. Now, I don't know what happened, but it would seem to me that based on this story, that you would have to have a number of witnesses. Wouldn't that make sense, Mike?
I would figure, yeah, I would figure that would be the case, but you never know.
I guess that's true.
Once you're in a hallway or something like that, or I don't know. I mean, she's claiming, yeah, between 4 or 5 in the morning at the Hyatt Regency on Peachtree Street after that. And the thing is, he is claiming at least, well, sources in WWE are saying that he is saying, well, he wasn't even there at all. He was with his fiance. He has not made a public statement yet at all. WWE's, the only statement they made has come from Jerry McDevitt, who was just basically pointed out that, hey, this isn't a WWE issue. This is, you know, 100% Slater. The alleged victim is making claims against Slater individually. This has nothing to do with WWE, and that's it.
What a nice statement.
Well, you know, it's very clear cut that, yes, that's the, we don't have time for this nonsense, arrogance type of response. But, you know, it's true. With that said, again, I mean, yeah, no witnesses as it stands right now. And I guess who knows what's going to come out of this. But, yeah, he's claiming he wasn't even there at all. And she's claiming, you know, he dragged her in. And, what does that mean, too? You know, I guess it'll depend on, was he drinking or something like that. I mean, I don't think it was a situation where, like, you know, Chris Jericho and Billy Silverman or whoever it was in that hotel room where Jericho's tearing his clothes off. But, you know, who knows what could have happened. It was after WrestleMania, and realistically, nothing could have happened, and Heath Slater could have been alone with his wife somewhere. So I guess time will tell.
So that's the latest. It's being investigated, and I guess we'll see if anything comes of this in the next couple of days, how WWE responds to this, aside from publicly. If I recall correctly, and I could be wrong here because God knows, I believe he is still one half of the tag team champions. Is that correct?
No, he is not. That's actually Michael McGillicuddy and David Otunga.
Way to go, Brian! I can't remember this stuff. Who the current WWE Tag Team Champions are? When I was a kid, I could have told you off the top of my head not only who they were, but who they beat. Now it's like, I seem to recall they were former Nexus guys. Which guys were they? I have no idea. So anyway, that brings us to SummerSlam, where at this point, we don't even have a Tag Team Championship match. So whoever the Tag Team Champions are, they ain't that important, apparently.
They barely have any matches on here.
As of early Sunday morning, this is the card, and then we'll talk about all the matches in detail. We've got Christian versus Randy Orton in a no-holds-barred match. We've got Kelly versus Beth for the Divas Championship. We have John Cena versus CM Punk for the WWE title with Triple H as guest referee. We've got Sheamus versus Mark Henry, and we've got Daniel Bryan versus Wade Barrett. What a card!
I was trying to actually figure out a way to, where it's like, okay, even if they don't add any matches to this thing whatsoever, how long could these things go? Basically, even if you add in Ezekiel Jackson and Cody Rhodes in a rematch for the Intercontinental title, you would still have about 40 minutes to fill. So, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what their plan is or what they're going to add here short notice. It's going to have to be something unless Punk and Cena are going to go for 90 minutes, which I don't believe they are.
Actually, at this point, they're scheduled for 40 again, but that's not 90.
Well, and that would make, you know, and again, they can carry from 10 to 10:55 to, you know, with all the video packages and interviews and everything else that'll take place. But, you know, it's even after that. It's like, I'd love to see Orton and Christian go a half hour, and they probably will. But again, you still have how much, what, an hour and a half left to fill.
Daniel Bryan and Wade Barrett is actually probably going to be a very good match. They've gotten great reviews on the road for their house show matches. I don't know why this would be any different. Sheamus and Mark Henry, I don't have high hopes for. I guess it could be okay. Punk and Cena is probably going to be great. Christian and Randy Orton is probably going to be great. Kelly versus Beth will hopefully be short. And, I mean, just looking at the five matches that we have as of Sunday morning, I mean, I look at this card and it's like, I mean, are people really going to be all that excited for this show any more so than any other B show? And this is an A show.
Taking the boxing mentality of, like, we have the main event. You're going to buy it for the main event. I don't think intentionally that's what they were doing. It's just a lack of planning and the fact that, I mean, that the Bryan-Sheamus match, or the, I'm sorry, the Bryan and Barrett match only came into play this past Friday. Sheamus and Henry only came into play last week, so I mean, it's just a lack of planning, but yeah, it's almost that thought of, well, you're going to buy it for Punk and Cena anyway, and we'll figure out the details as we go along.
I think that's the kind of thing they do for a B show. This show, last year's show, did 350,000 buys worldwide. The year before, it did 365, so it's basically neck and neck. you know, the Money in the Bank show did very well, 20% above what they'd done the year before. So about 195,000 buys. So you're looking at an expectation of an extra 150,000 buys on top of what they did for the Money in the Bank show. And I'm just not feeling it at that level. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe just the fact that it's SummerSlam, they're going to do an extra 200,000 buys on top of what they did at Money in the Bank. But this just doesn't feel nearly as hot as it did going into Money in the Bank. And while that show did better, it still didn't do, like, even, I guess, in the top 20 of B shows over the last 5 years, which is quite a remarkable statistic, in fact.
No, and the worst part is they had 4 weeks. They had four Raws to get ready for this. And, you know, I'm surprised they didn't put more into it, you know, as far as rounding out the card and everything, because it's, you know, you're going to have another month and you're going to have Night of Champions. Then 2 weeks after that, it's Hell in the Cell. And then 2 weeks after that or 3 weeks after that is Vengeance. So you figure those aren't going to do all that great. Hell in the Cell probably will do pretty decent. But the other ones aren't going to do all that great. So, yeah, I would figure you want to maximize this buy rate as much as you possibly can here before Rock comes back at Survivor Series.
So we've got the matches. Daniel Bryan and Wade Barrett. I don't think it really matters at all who wins this match. Daniel Bryan has his briefcase. I don't think they're going to put the briefcase on the line. I suppose they could add that stipulation to the show or something like that. If it's going to be a long-term feud, then maybe Wade Barrett wins this one and Daniel Bryan has to go for revenge, or maybe they have Wade Barrett win and then Daniel Bryan puts his briefcase on the line for the next match and then he wins. Don't think it really matters all that much. Regardless, it should be a very good match. And I am looking forward to Daniel Bryan versus Wade Barrett.
Yeah, I actually am too, and it's something that they're probably going to give time to, and that's going to be cool. It's, you know, I wonder if there's going to be some sort of, you know, craftastic run-in at the end or something like that to set something up for one of the two guys, most likely Daniel Bryan. But I'll actually go out on a limb and say Bryan actually wins by submission in what actually is a really good match.
All right, a fine prediction. We're going to run down the remaining 4 matches on the show, having run down 1 so far on this 5-match show. When we come back from the break, listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, and XM Radio 208, Sirius Channel 94. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here, as we are every week, Sirius Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, Sports Byline USA, affiliates all around the country, streaming worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, talking the SummerSlam pay-per-view this week. Got a lot of other news to get into as well, but we are running down the card. We've run down a match so far, and now we have 4 more matches to run down here on this 5-match SummerSlam card, at least as of early Sunday morning. Perhaps they've added more by the time you're listening to this, but our predictions will not change. We've got Sheamus versus Mark Henry. Match is interesting. Originally, the idea was they were building up Mark Henry as a killer so that he could have a match with Randy Orton. Well, I don't know if this has changed, but certainly as of a couple of weeks ago, they were planning on doing yet another Randy Orton Christian match at the September pay-per-view. That would be 6 straight pay-per-views in a row with the same match. So if that's the case, perhaps that means that Mark Henry is going to beat Sheamus. Or perhaps that means Sheamus will beat Mark Henry and that feud's not taking place with Orton. I don't know where they're going. They just turned Sheamus babyface. It would be kind of wacky for him to not win this match here. But I guess we'll see. What is your prediction?
Yeah, I would figure Sheamus wins this match, and I cannot believe that they do it. I'd be stunned if they... Again, it wouldn't hurt my feelings, because I'm figuring Christian Orton's going to be a really good match, and it's like Jarrett and Angle, where they were figuring out reasons for them to wrestle every month. It's not going to hurt my feelings to get Christian Orton again probably next month, but I would probably rather see, I don't know, Christian and Sheamus a lot more than that, and I don't want to see Orton Henry. I mean, there's got to be somebody else for Orton, Barrett maybe, I don't know, and somebody else for Henry. I don't know who that could be either. As long as it's not Daniel Bryan, I guess I'll be okay with it. But, again, I would figure Sheamus wins this. And, again, just because I can see Sheamus-Christian happening, and again, if they don't, I get. If they actually go with Christian Orton again, and you need Sheamus to do something, and it's going to be against Mark Henry, I still cannot see him losing this. He's got to win this, and maybe he gets beat up or destroyed next time on SmackDown if they're going to continue this feud on.
The next pay-per-view, by the way, is Night of Champions, so perhaps they can go from all of these stipulation matches. They could do it the way TNA does it, and next month it will be Christian versus Randy Orton in a championship match for the title.
That's probably what they'll do, actually.
I don't need to see this match again. I love these guys. I think they have great matches. But I don't need to see it for the, not just the sixth time, because they had a match on TV for free as well. I will have seen it seven times, including once live.
So Randy Orton against Ted DiBiase, then, and Christian against who?
Cody Rhodes. Champion versus champion. I don't know. We've got, speaking of
Big
champions.
Big against Mark Henry. There you go. That's how Mark Henry can fill his void.
Boy, that sounds awesome. Kelly versus Beth Phoenix for the women's title.
Speaking of sounding awesome.
Beth is going to beat her and win the championship. I think that's my prediction.
Yeah, it'll probably go on right before Punk and Cena, too. I think that's a pretty safe bet. And I don't know what they're going to do with Beth and Natalya. I don't know if they can string that. I guess they'll string it out to WrestleMania, which would probably make the most sense with them, you know, somehow breaking up after the beginning of the year. But I guess them running roughshod over the entire women's division is far better than what they usually do with the women's division.
We have Christian versus Randy Orton for the world title, which, again, should be a good match. It's no holds barred. They could do a lot of different things for once here. And maybe the idea is they do a bunch of different things. They hit each other with some cans. They do some things we haven't seen with sticks and that sort of thing. And then next month when they have a normal wrestling match, it's all new again. Maybe that's the idea.
Did you see No Holds Barred in the theater?
Thankfully, no.
I did. Just remember that line in there where Hulk picks the guy up and he poops himself, and Hulk, he kind of sniffs around. He goes, "It smells like duty," and then just throws the guy on the ground. It was, yeah. Again, we've talked about Christian and Orton every month now for the last couple of months, so I don't know what else there is to say outside of it's going to be a good match. And it would make sense to me if Christian, Christian needs the belt far more than Randy Orton, so Christian should win the match.
What in God's name did your no-holds-barred story have to do with this match?
Absolutely nothing, although I wonder, because it's no-holds-barred, if they'll go WCW-like and there'll be like a Zeus cutout, like to take the place of like the Scott Hall picture.
I see. That was the most random moment in the history of this show.
That's what we're here for.
All righty. CM Punk and John Cena for the WWE title, with Triple H as the guest referee. What are your thoughts on this match today?
Well, it's going to be hard to beat Money in the Bank. And, how Cena is on Raw, I know there's all these people that really want to see Cena go dirty and think it's going to help his character and would help matters and things like that. I don't think so. I mean, I know I'm a product of the 80s. You know, I can handle multiple guys doing multiple things and being cheered by certain segments. And, you know, there's room for both CM Punk and John Cena to be big babyface stars. There really is. So thinking coming out of this, you know, it's how all the screw jobs happen. Because, again, I don't know if Alberto Del Rio, I don't think I'd have him win the title in Mexico, although it would make sense, wouldn't hurt my feelings. I just would see them doing that on a pay-per-view. And again, sooner or later, Alberto Del Rio is going to get the title. And it's this Triple H screw, CM Punk giving Cena the win, which still makes Cena look corporate, but then he basically sets him up for Del Rio to lay him out. I mean, there are ways so they both can come out with some shine, because Cena has taken such a beating, you know, ever since basically last year. I mean, you know, the whole thing through with The Rock and everything else, and it's just, you know, it's time to, I think, stabilize those guys. It's, you know, to have Del Rio playing off a guy who, and again, people are starting to hate him more and more, but he's still not hateable to the level of people really getting into him as a top-tier guy. So, he still needs some help, and it doesn't matter who it's against, either Punk or Cena. and the other guy is probably going to get Triple H in the McMahon family feud. So that's what I'm thinking is going to come out of this, and I would figure, I'll say Punk gets the win, and then Del Rio cashes it in on him. With help, maybe Triple H finally gets that pedigree in on Punk that he wanted to do on Raw.
Thing with this match, I was really thinking about this, because I remember Money in the Bank Sunday when we did the preview show, and the entire show was us talking about the match and people emailing in with what they thought was going to happen. And there was like this real feeling of excitement that day that there hadn't been.
Hundreds of emails with fantasy booking scenarios from people who don't do fantasy booking scenarios.
Yes. It built and built and built until fans were like in a frenzy that day, essentially. Like, literally in a frenzy. Like, angry, hungry sharks. Sending in emails to us with all of their ideas. And it almost seems to me kind of the opposite with this show, where everybody thought the promo was very good on Raw, but it's now 6 days later, and it just feels like interest is I don't want to say maybe lower by the day or anything like that, but I think that everyone's interest peaked on Monday, and then like on Tuesday they talked about it and discussed it and that sort of thing, and I just don't feel like today there's that great overwhelming interest in this particular match. And part of the reason for that, I think, is that the key to Money in the Bank, as we talked about many times, was all of the different scenarios that could happen. You know, who's walking out with the title? What if Punk loses? How are they going to do this deal if he doesn't leave with the title? When's he going to come back? What's he going to do? Is he going to come back with a posse? What's going to happen if Cena loses? Is he going to do the fired gimmick? You know, there were so many different options and possibilities. Does Del Rio cash in? Does somebody else get the briefcase and cash in? Do two people cash in? All this stuff. Here, it's like, okay, does Del Rio cash in or not? If he doesn't, does it make any difference whether John Cena or CM Punk is the champion? Maybe I sound, you know, I don't want, I mean, I had people that were talking about how clearly Brian doesn't like wrestling anymore. He's not excited about this angle and this and that. And I'm just sitting here thinking, did you hear how excited I was about this angle 1 month ago? What happened in the last month? It wasn't me. You know, I just... It does not feel as important. It does not feel like it matters who leaves with the title. And I don't know. I am not feeling this match. I mean, certainly no one's feeling this match like they felt Money in the Bank. But this match to me just feels like another championship match, and it shouldn't.
Well, and it's proof that you do love pro wrestling, because it's that pro wrestling side of you coming out where you go, okay, they hit upon something. Now let's see how they're going to build for this over a number of weeks. Oh, they don't do that. They don't do that anymore. This is WWE's hot shot booking. They are the one off. It's like that movie thing I thought of last week, where it's like last year it was Nexus. This year it's the thing with Punk, where it's like, here's our big summer spectacular, and then we're going to limp into after that. After it catches everybody's eyes, we're going to go back into doing what we're doing. And it's just, you know, the McMahon involvement, Triple H kind of, you know, casting a shadow over everything, the fact that there was, you know, and again, people were kind of losing their minds a little bit with the Ring of Honor stuff and all that sort of stuff that could possibly have taken place. But the fact that they didn't build on this in a more traditional pro wrestling way, where it looked like they had the ability to do that, I mean, whatever plans they had could have went on and continued on with Punk as an outsider, and it never ended up happening. It's just one of those things where you throw your hands up and go, well, it's what they do, and I guess I'll just wait and see what happens. So it is hard to get excited over this, because they've proven, you know, time and again over the last couple of years that, you know, they'll make you, you know, it's hard as a consumer. You wait for them to impress you.
Who do you think Triple H is going to turn on, if anybody?
I would actually say both. I think he plays a hand in it, but I think it's really more Punk than Cena. I would say it's more Punk than Cena, but it ends up being both in the end.
I predict he doesn't turn on anybody. I predict he's a completely unbiased referee and nothing happens. We're going to talk about this more after the break, and more on this match in general. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. As soon as this show ends, we're going to have live running play-by-play of the SummerSlam pay-per-view by Dave Meltzer on the front page of the website. All of the matches. We'll tell you what happened in the title matches and the CM Punk-John Cena match. We'll give you the play-by-play and the rundown. And later on this evening, Dave and I are going to be up with a brand new post-show audio. If you love this radio program, you only get to hear it once a week, you are missing out. You're going to have to wait until next week to get our thoughts on SummerSlam if you're only listening to this show live on Sports Byline USA, Sirius 94, and XM 208. Meanwhile, we're doing shows every single day on the website. We're doing another one tonight, myself and Dave. In addition to talking about the news, we have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and mixed martial arts. Chris Jericho, Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Batista, Steve Austin, Lance Storm. We've had tons of WWE writers on the show. We had Pat Miletich on the show the other day. Jens Pulver, both awesome MMA interviews, by the way. List goes on and on. Ben Henderson, in fact, who's fighting on the UFC on Versus show tonight. All of these available in our archives. It's $10.99 a month. That is it. No extra fees. And for $10.99, you not only get all of our brand new shows, but you get every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005. Over 3,000 shows in our archives. Thousands and thousands of hours. Just head up there, search the archives, find the shows you want to listen to, download them, and you are on your way. You can listen to this show literally, probably every single moment of every single day, all month, and you never listen to everything. It's impossible. So anyway, check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. If you want to know more, if this radio show is not enough of a sample for you, head up to the website, scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There's a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Check them out. Click the links. They're MP3s. You don't have to do anything extra. You don't have to give us an email address. You don't have to do anything wacky. Just click the link. Download the show, listen to it, and I've said this a million times. If you love Wrestling Observer Live, if you love this show and you listen to it religiously every week, I have absolutely no idea why you don't sign up, because you are missing out. I guarantee you will love your subscription if you like this radio show. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We've had a lot of people that were loyal listeners to this program and ended up getting a subscription, and they are so happy with all the things available. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the SummerSlam pay-per-view here. I was talking about my prediction that Triple H was going to do nothing. And just as an aside here, as it regards the CM Punk storyline, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, Brian, you're down on this. You should wait to see how it plays out. Maybe they've got all these great ideas. Listen, maybe CM Punk has all these great ideas, and maybe he can convince WWE to do a lot of them. But I can tell you for a fact that there are at least, as of the time that we are doing this update, there are at least two different SummerSlam scripts. One of them has a finish in the main event. The other has an Alberto Del Rio cash-in. There are at least two completely different ways they're going to go. And I guess this afternoon, Vince McMahon is just going to flip a coin, decide which one they're going to use. But that right there is the amount of long-term planning that WWE is doing right now. These finishes are completely totally different and take the storyline in completely, totally different directions. There is no long-term planning right now.
Like, indie shows have longer-term planning than this.
That's true. But I mean, there is long-term planning. Long-term, Alberto Del Rio is going to be your champion. He's going to go to Mexico. You know, that's the long-term. How they get there, whether they get there tonight or tomorrow or next pay-per-view or whenever, that's all up in the air. None of that's long-term.
Well, that's the, again, and it's the most frustrating thing with them, and it's one of their most glaring problems, even though they don't think it is just plan. New Japan is the best promotion in the world, and they were on death's door a couple of years ago, but one of the ways they did rebuild everything was they got faith back with their fans that they were going to put on continuously good shows, and it took a long time for the fans to come back. The industry has changed there, and they still haven't come back in droves or anything, but they have confidence that when they go, they're going to see a bunch of different characters slotted correctly, and they're going to see, you know, the guys on top who are great and in good matches, and planning of where things are going to go and how they get there matters, and it still works. it still works, and it's when WWE does these things, much like they did with going into Money in the Bank, they're great. They're great. They have these guys, and again, even with all the soap opera donks and other writers that they've brought in, you know, there's still enough people there who know what's going on and know how to do things that there's nobody better than them when it comes time for them to plan something out and do it. That's the frustrating part with them not doing this stuff and doing everything last minute. It should be a zillion times better than what they're doing, and they shouldn't just be happy about getting scores. Like, Money in the Bank did a lot better than we thought it would. Great. Worry about the rest of them, too. I mean, the fact that SummerSlam means nothing. People used to have SummerSlam parties. It's not like it's WrestleMania or Royal Rumble, but, you know, Survivor Series and SummerSlam used to mean something, and now you got five matches that you did, only one of which you really care about. You're completely dismissed your other belt in the lead-up to building up your main event to this, which is still overshadowed by a guy who doesn't even work for you, who's going to be main eventing WrestleMania next year. It's just, it's too bad that they don't do more planning and figure out things better, because it makes a far better product to watch, and you don't get the apathy that we have and that a lot of people have, which is, okay, impress us. You did that, you went in a direction that, you know, we didn't really want you to go in, and the people, I don't think anybody wanted to see I Love You Pop on Monday. I mean, I know how well it turned out and everything, but look at all the stuff you could have done with Punk after that, and it's like, okay, you didn't do it, so whatever your plan is, we're going to sit back, and if it's that good, we'll applaud it, but I want to wait and see.
What passion.
Cutting promos.
Want to make
Jim
a
Cornette talk. See, pro wrestling taught me everything in life. Jim Cornette taught me how to get through my day talking.
Well, that's a good person, isn't he, to teach you how to get through your day talking.
I'm really upset that Ric Flair taught me about money, though.
Well, that is a problem, and probably, hopefully not relationships.
That's...
Let's move on.
Yes.
tonight, of course, immediately after the show goes off the air, as noted at WrestlingObserver.com, Dave's doing the live running play-by-play, the flay-by-play. Wanted to mention as well, very quickly, the Wrestling Observer Facebook. It's at Facebook.com/WrestlingObserver. You can head up there right now. It's updated quite a bit. Get up there and click like and become one of the fans of this radio show. That's Facebook.com/WrestlingObserver. And my personal Facebook is Facebook.com/OfficialBrianAlvarez, where if you go up right now to Facebook.com/OfficialBrianAlvarez, there's a picture of me and Hickson Gracie. That's right. I went to a Hickson Gracie seminar this weekend in San Diego, and it was awesome. And the things I learned, Mike, about invisible jiu-jitsu.
Invisible jiu-jitsu.
That's his big thing. People make a lot of fun of the term invisible jiu-jitsu on the internet, but if you understand what he's talking about, it's not really invisible jiu-jitsu. He's essentially just saying you can't see it, you have to feel it, which is true in jiu-jitsu. But it was an awesome seminar. And speaking of
like
fighting...
spiritual jiu-jitsu, really.
He is. He's a philosopher.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was awesome. If you're into jiu-jitsu, I know it's really hard. Those of you that do jiu-jitsu, I'm sure are aware how hard it is to get to a Hickson Gracie seminar. Usually don't hear about them until it's too late, like they're over. But if you ever have a chance to go to one, go. He's actually having one Monday, tomorrow, at the Gracie School in Torrance, California. I believe it is sold out, but you might still be able to buy a seat to watch for $80, which people are doing. That should tell you something. So that's tomorrow. But anyway, on the subject
don't
of...
Don't do what Yoji Anjo did.
Yes. On the subject of MMA and getting your getting slaughtered, tonight is UFC on Versus. And it's going to be quite the show. As noted when we opened up this program here, there are not a lot of big names on the show, quite frankly. But there are a bunch of guys on the show that have won all sorts of different Fight of the Nights. In fact, I think Chris Lytle has had 5 Fight of the Night awards, if I recall correctly. He's facing Dan Hardy in the main event. And this is looking to be an awesome show. So if you've got a DVR and you're planning to watch SmackDown or SummerSlam, And probably SmackDown as well, because most of you probably haven't watched it yet. But if you plan on watching these shows, set your DVR for UFC on Versus this evening. It's probably going to be an awesome show.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those great, in the vein of WEC on a Sunday night, meets, you know, the good part about the UFC infusion of guys at 170 and stuff like that. I mean, it's a great card. I mean, especially coming off the UFC 133 card, which, you know, again, ended up being far better than anyone could have really hoped and expected for outside of the undercard. I mean, this is a show for free, again, that's completely stacked, and it's one of those. I'm of the belief that they should probably have separate branding, and they shouldn't have too many shows under the UFC name, but they should have a lot under the UFC name. And here's a good example of when people say there's too many shows. You know what? You can never get too many shows like this. You may not be able to see them all, but, I mean, Jim Miller and Ben Henderson, and, I mean, the card is loaded up from top to bottom with the possibility of really, really exciting fights. And again, you got a storyline going in. You got Dan Hardy, who needs a win, you know, an impressive win badly, he's a great character. People love to root for him or root against him because he's just, you know, a ball of charisma, and he's got a goofy look and everything. He likes to bang, but he needs a win. And then you got, you know, going in there against Lytle, who just announces his retirement. I mean, he's a guy that, like you said, always fights in exciting fights. He's been in the UFC forever. I mean, he started fighting in MMA in 1999. I mean, he's been around a long, long time. And now he's announced his retirement. You know, what better way to go out than, you know, a nationally televised victory over, you know, a young gun and Dan Hardy. So, great storyline, great fights on the undercard. It looks like it's going to be an awesome show. And again, this is why you can't have too many good shows.
Let's see here. Chris Lytle has had 5 Fight of the Night awards, a submission of the night, a knockout of the night, another submission of the night. He is fighting in the main event against Dan Hardy, who is going to stand there and probably take quite the beating. We've got Jim Miller, who's got a submission of the night, a fight of the night, and a submission of the night. We've got Ben Henderson, who ate the Showtime kick, also has a fight of the night and a submission of the night. 2 fight of the nights and a submission of the night. We got Charles Oliveira, who has a submission of the night and a fight of the night. We've got Donald Cerrone, the cowboy, who's had 3 Fight of the Nights. And I guess those were his only awards because he was in WEC for a lot of the time. And Dwayne Ludwig as well, who actually doesn't have any. But still, if you look at that...
He's been involved in some wars over the years, too.
Sure. Keep in mind, if you don't win Fight of the Night, you can still have the second best Fight of the Night and not have that rewarded. So, anyway, this card is looking phenomenal. It's Amir Sadala versus Dwayne Ludwig, Charles Oliveira against Donald Cerrone, Jim Miller versus Ben Henderson, Dan Hardy versus Chris Lytle. And with Henderson and Cerrone on there, it's almost like an old-school WEC event. Those things were awesome. So anyway, if you get a chance, this is a show to see taking place in Milwaukee at the Bradley Center. And it is, I guess, a preview for the upcoming UFC 134 show, which is taking place on the 27th in Rio. And that show, of course, is headlined by Anderson Silva versus Yushin Okami. We got Mauricio Shogun Hua versus Forrest Griffin, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira versus Brendan Schaub, and a lot more. That's looking to be a heck of a show as well. So, Mike, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the news, and we've got a ton of stuff to get into in the second hour as well. If you have any more comments on this show that's airing tonight, I'll let you get those in after the break. Otherwise, we'll talk news and more in the second hour, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, any final thoughts on the UFC on Versus show this evening? By the way, I should mention before I let you talk about this, that's what I do. You see a lot of these shows on Facebook. A lot of these fights are going to be airing on Facebook. The entire prelim card is going to take place on Facebook. That's 8 fights that you can check out before the main show begins on Versus. So make sure you check those out. There's some good stuff on the undercard.
I think I'm taking Lytle. I think I'm taking Jim Miller. And let's see, I'll take Sadala over Ludwig. And That's all I'll predict right now.
You know, it's really interesting.
I'll probably be wrong about all of those, but I won't care because it should be a good show.
It's interesting that that main event, I mean, I don't know. Dan Hardy is he's had three straight losses. And Chris Lytle has already announced his retirement. So, essentially, if Chris Lytle wins, both men, gone. If Dan Hardy wins, I guess he stays around for a while, but Chris Lytle is gone. So really, unless you want to lose two guys from your division, then Dan Hardy better win this fight. Because if Lytle wins, they're both history.
Well, it's not like Lytle can't bang. I mean, he boxed. He's got pretty damn good hands, even though he's mostly known for wrapping guys up with submissions to finish them. But, you know, look, he can bang out Hardy. And again, Hardy does need to win this. But you know what? What are the odds he's going to go to the ground? And even if he does, what's he going to do against Lytle? It's not a really a good fight for Dan Hardy, I don't think.
And Ben Henderson and Jim Miller as well. Ben Henderson has promised that basically they've essentially told Jim Miller that if he beats Henderson, he's in line for a title shot at 155. And Henderson has said that if he wins the fight, he has not been guaranteed a title shot, but he says if he wins the fight, he is going to do some sort of recreation of when George St. Pierre dropped to his knees and begged for a title shot. But he says it's going to be different. It is going to be something you are not going to want to miss. So I guess that's it's a teaser. He better win after making that statement right there. So again, bunch of prelims on Facebook, main card on Versus. It's all free, so check it out tonight. I'm back in a moment with the second hour here on Wrestling Observer Live. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts here on Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, Sports Byline USA affiliates around the country. We got so much pro wrestling and MMA to talk about today, it's not even funny. Spent the entire hour talking about the SummerSlam card for tonight, the UFC on Versus show, which looks to be awesome. And now Mike's going to give us a review of the G1 Climax tournament from Japan. We're worldwide.
Yes, and it has been awesome. And if you haven't been watching it, a lot of it's up on YouTube. It's easy to find here as the tournament goes on. And as by the time you hear this, there will be a G1 winner taking place at Sumo Hall today, so it'll be over by now. But the way it's looking now, there's been a big log jam up top. It's a 20-man split into two divisions, and I'm guessing Hirooki Goto is going to be the one who comes out of this, defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi, avenging a loss from earlier this year. But there's a lot of different ways this thing can go, but the one thing that's been a constant throughout it has just been a very incredibly well-booked tournament that always gives suspense as far as the finals go. And again, there's about seven different guys that could win this thing, including MVP being one of them. And Lance Archer, believe it or not, I mean, Carl Anderson's been a guy who's gone over to Japan and has actually looked very good. MVP's another guy who's gone over there and has just gotten a lot better in his game as well. And actually, Lance Archer actually is doing a good job over there and actually got a win over Minoru Suzuki, if you can actually believe that. But he does not look out of place there, which was kind of a surprise when he was put into such a prestigious tournament as the G1. But they've actually given him some wins, and he's actually held up to his end of the deal. But Yuji Nagata, Shinsuke Nakamura, Hiroshi Tenzan had a damn great match, actually, against Nakamura for a guy who's a broken-down old man. They had a four-star match. The whole thing has actually been fantastic. And, again, it's kudos to New Japan this year for putting together, you know, such great matches and a lot of great drama going through it.
We're going to talk more about tournaments after the break. The Bound for Glory tournament here at Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. Tons of stuff to talk about in the opening segment there. Mike was talking about the G1 Climax tournament, which, as of the time we are recording this program, had not wrapped up yet. He made a prediction, Hirooki Goto winning the entire thing, and I have just determined that he is cursed, and now he's going to look a fool.
Probably, but you know what? No matter who wins it, it's going to be good in all likelihood.
Really? Because you know who's going to win it?
Well, it doesn't matter. If it's, hey, Tanahashi, Nakamura, Makabe, Goto, look, they're all winners. I would have no problem with any of them.
Yeah, but you know who's going to win it, don't you?
No, who?
Alberto Del Rio.
You know what? I would rather see Daniel Bryan go over there and cash in his briefcase.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that. That's right. He's got a briefcase.
A blue one at that.
Well, I was going to say something, but I better not. I'll get myself in trouble.
By the way, up on the on YouTube too, somebody has put it up there. August 1st, you should probably go out of your way to see this. Kota Ibushi defeated Ryusuke Taguchi to retain the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. There's been a lot of really good matches between Ibushi, Prince Devitt, and Taguchi in Japan that are probably the, you know, candidates for Junior Heavyweight Match of the Year. This one may have actually been the Junior Heavyweight Match of the Year so far this year. It's been that good, and it's actually up on YouTube now.
I'll say what I was going to say. I'll just say this. Speaking of Daniel Bryan and his briefcase, he has promised to cash it in at SummerSlam. He did another promo. He did an interview, actually. I believe it was for IGN this weekend, where he said that he was not cashing it in before WrestleMania. And there has been at least one occasion since he won the briefcase where he almost cashed it in. That was their plan, and for a number of reasons, they changed their mind. So this could be a deal where they are wanting that... that surprise aspect of him cashing in before WrestleMania, and that's why he's insisting he's not going to cash in. He could cash in tomorrow, for all we know, or later this afternoon at SummerSlam. I guess we'll find out. I guess I don't expect it to happen, but based on certain things and ideas they've had, it is possible that he could cash it in at SummerSlam. Now, I don't know if that would mean it would be a heel turn because he was a liar, or maybe if he cashed in on a heel and the storyline was that he used his misdirection to get one up on a bad guy, they would see it as a babyface type move. I guess we shall find out, or maybe he will just wait till WrestleMania. It does open up the problem of John Cena promising he's going to defend one title at WrestleMania, and that, of course, is against Rock, and then Daniel Bryan promising to fight for the title at WrestleMania, which would mean, what the hell does a Royal Rumble winner get? Nothing?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what Alex Riley has hidden in his briefcase.
Well, he's got nothing.
That's.
He just thought it would be funny one day to keep carrying the briefcase out, and I guess that nobody noticed or told him not to.
Maybe he's got a fine suit in there, at least. Yeah, I love how they just gave him the briefcase because it's like, well, when they make the new, like, action figure of him, he's got, like, the built-in gimmick he can have is, like, you know the action arm feature. He, like, can beat people with the briefcase. I swear that's how they think sometimes.
I think that was the story he told, was that after Miz cashed it in, he just thought, well, you know, this briefcase is a good gimmick. I'm just going to keep carrying it to the ring. And he did.
I remember seeing that when I had a chance to see Juan Cena debut, and it was just like, he's still got the briefcase. And it was just, it's not like he got a brand new Halliburton or anything. It was just this sorry red dented-ass briefcase.
Yeah, so presumably in storyline, which would have been a great vignette, by the way, after Miz cashed in the briefcase and the show was over, Alex Riley wandered down to ringside and he said to the ring announcer, can I please have the briefcase back? And they gave it to him, and then he kept bringing it out.
And he opened it up one day with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and inside of it was a trash can. And inside of that trash can was the WCW TV title.
You know, if they really had creative people on their creative team, like yourself, for example, with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan idea, they would do a deal where, like, I mean, you'd have to have a continuity editor, and your continuity editor would have to sit down and watch the show and go, why does Alex Riley still have that briefcase? And then he'd have to write, he'd hand this off to a writer who would then create a story of how Alex Riley came about getting that briefcase back, which, like I said, he presumably walked down to ringside after the pay-per-view, and he said to the bell ringer, can I have the briefcase back? And then he took it back and procured it. And then they could shoot these vignettes, and they would be extras on the DVDs for the shows.
And that's one of the amazing parts, too, is just, and this has always been a problem, especially with WWF and WWE for, I mean, years and years and years and years and years. The fact that there is no continuity editor, it's, I mean, look at all the bookers from over the years, George Scott, Leo Garibaldi, Ole Anderson, Sandy Scott, George Scott, great bookers over the years. It's so easy to, Jim Cornette, it's so easy to tie things together. Cornette being the greatest example, because they would just kill him in OVW by stealing guys and then sending him back down there for TVs and, you know, completely changing their gimmicks and everything. But he always found a way to explain it away. And it's not that hard. You know, that's the difference between booking and writing, is it's not that hard to tie it together, even if it's in a goofy way. A guy can go ahead and do that. And the fact that they don't, I mean, it's wrestling. I mean, you don't have to have as many continuity errors as you do. I mean, you can always tie them together and somehow do it in an entertaining way, or be able to pluck from the past to go ahead and use something for the future. And again, it's one of those frustrating things that they can do incredibly well if they want to, yet don't do it.
You heard, I presume, about Kimbo Slice's boxing debut.
17 seconds.
He beat a man named James Wade, who was 0-1.
Well, at least they had equal records. Maybe they were in a commission state. I'm not exactly sure where they were, but...
Well, those wouldn't be equal, would they? Kimbo was 0-0.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at least as far as the range of competition goes, I mean, it fits in there nicely.
I see. Yeah.
Although, of course, Kimbo's had all this, you know, street fighting experience and such, and it should be noted he is apparently related to Emmanuel Burton, who I think goes by the name of Emmanuel Augustus now, who is a great club fighter. That his fight with Mickey Ward on ESPN Friday Night Fights or Tuesday Night Fights, one of the two, ended up leading to Mickey Ward's fights with Arturo Gatti, which basically made him famous and got a movie named after him with Amy Adams in it, and nothing wrong with her.
Let's talk about some of the other news here before we have to head to our next break. There is an abundance of it. There is a new Sin Cara, at least. Well, I don't know what they're going to do. What happened was, the real Sin Cara, as we've noted, we talked about this last week on the show, the real man who's playing the former Mystico, actually I can't even say that because the man now playing Mystico, or Sin Cara, was also a Mystico. All right.
Luis Ignacio.
Let me try and explain this to people that don't know their real names, okay? So, there was a guy that became a huge star in Mexico under the name Mystico. Huge star. Like, gigantic. He got signed by WWE, and he became the original Sin Cara. This man got suspended for a steroid test failure. A 30-day suspension. They wanted him back on SmackDown this week for God knows what reason. So, in order to bring him back, even though he's suspended, they took another man who earlier in his career had also used the name Mystico and had used it at around the exact same time that Mystico got the Mystico gimmick in CMLL. And he was known as Mystico, the Juarez Mystico. And he ended up changing his name. And he ended up getting signed to WWE, and he was playing a character named Unico in FCW. That's the developmental territory. So they took Unico, who used to be Mystico, but not the real Mystico, and they put Unico under a mask as Sin Cara, and he appeared on SmackDown this week, and they tried to pretend, kind of, that he was Sin Cara coming back. But the way they played it, by mentioning that he's a little fatter and he was doing different moves, seems to indicate that the idea is that at some point, perhaps in the next couple of weeks, the real Sin Cara, the big-time Mystico, is going to come back, and it will be Sin Cara versus Sin Cara, Mystico versus Mystico, and then I guess I don't know what will happen from there. How was that for an explanation?
I think you did a hell of a job.
I do my best.
Now, I think the big question is, what happens to Averno, although he's making big bank in Mexico now anyway?
Well, Averno was signed by WWE. He was Mystico's best opponent. Triple H basically said to Sin Cara, who can you work with that will have great matches? And he said Averno. And what happened next? We'll tell you after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 40 minutes or so. And as we were talking about before the break, I don't even want to try and explain that story again. Suffice to say, there is a fake Sin Cara on SmackDown, And presumably the real Sin Cara is going to come back, and they'll have a Sin Cara versus Sin Cara feud. And before we get talking about Averdo again, I just have to mention, the WWE in the past has done gimmick versus gimmick feuds. We had Undertaker versus fake Undertaker, and we had Kane versus fake Kane. And Mike, what did both of these things have in common?
They both sucked.
Yes, they did. They sucked. So, is Sin Cara versus Sin Cara going to work? It's actually interesting because the guys aren't exactly on the best of terms. Because as noted, down in Mexico, there was the CMLL Místico, and then there was the Juarez Místico, and I don't think either was happy with the other. I think the Juarez Místico felt that he had the gimmick first, and I think that the Místico felt that he made the gimmick into a sensation, so he deserved the rights to it. Whatever the issues were, I don't think they're on the best of terms. Will they bring out the best in each other? Will they bring out the worst? Will Único make Sin Cara look bad, or vice versa? Could be interesting.
How long has Único been in Florida?
I don't know, but he's the best guy there.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, I mean, he had a match with John Moxley, whatever his name is now. I can't remember what it is, Dean whatever, but Dean Ambrose. But, I mean, yeah, he is good, but it's just, again, that there's another clash there, too, where it was looking like if they were going to do a feud with Místico and somebody, it was going to be him and Averno, and you knew that was going to work, where, yeah, I mean, is Místico and Único working together going to work? And are they even going to bring Místico back? Because, again, I mean, it was obvious there was a difference. They played to the fact that there was a difference. But you know what? If they wouldn't have said anything and the weeks went on, obviously it's like Conan and Paul Diamond. People would have known it changed. But frankly, I don't think that there's that much love. I mean, they're loving a character. They're loving a suit. It's like what people used to criticize Jushin Liger or throw a dig at him. But in a way, that's what it is right now in WWE. Do they love Místico or the guy who played Místico, or do they love Sin Cara? You know, there's a certain aspect of fans, obviously, the Mexican fans and stuff like that, that they love Místico, but for the most part, most of the fan base out there just love Sin Cara. They love the music, the lights, the ring entrance, the mini tramp, all that stuff. And if Único can do just enough of it and pull off enough of a look, I wouldn't stun me if they wanted to drive the point home to Místico that, you know, we're done with you. I don't think people really, most of the WWE fan base would have cared.
Well, two things. First off, I shouldn't have said he was the best guy in Florida because the former John Moxley, the former Tyler Black, those guys are both awesome.
Steamboat's good, too.
Richie Steamboat, yeah. But in terms of the Sin Cara deal, here's the deal to me. And granted, none of this means a damn thing because they can change their minds in the drop of a hat, and they have many times. In fact, at one point he was not coming back, and then they decided he was coming back, and so this could change in the blink of an eye. But here's what I'll say. Reports we got Tuesday were that fans did not notice it was a different guy. So, if the fans didn't know that it was a different guy, and you want to send a message to Místico, to Sin Cara, the original, that he can be replaced, then to me, you have Único go out there. You have him do, and he did. He did the exact same entrance. He did the same mini tramp. He did the exact same entrance. I wouldn't have had him do different moves. You know, you have him go out there, and he does all Sin Cara spots, and that sends a message that we don't need you. We have a guy who can play the gimmick. Nobody notices you're not here. He does all your moves exactly the same. You are completely interchangeable. Now, by having the guy go out and do different moves, and you mention the different moves, and you mention the different physique, I mean, you're basically, at least as of Tuesday, telling people that, okay, you know, this ain't the real deal, without outright saying it. So, I think Tuesday their idea was to bring him back. Whether they will bring him back, whether their minds will be changed when his suspension is up, which is in about a week or so, that's another matter entirely, but I guess.
Yeah, but you know the thing is there too, Brian. They could just be hedging their bets where they're saying it, but I mean, it's not like they haven't forgot about bigger issues before, you know, and just stopped talking about it. So, I mean, again, if they looked at this and said, well, we didn't really get a backlash from it, we're just going to roll with this, maybe they just roll with it. Now, the Mexican thing, when they go on tour, there is a completely different story.
That's an issue.
That's, you know, obviously. And I don't know when that tour is and when the original Sin Cara's suspension ends, but, I mean, do they match up?
Oh, his suspension should end, like, next week.
Oh, okay. So he'll be ready for that tour. And, again, for that, even if you don't, I don't know, are they taping TV down there?
Oh, yeah. It's the first ever Raw and SmackDown tapings in Mexico, so.
Ooh. Because yeah. You've got to put, unless you don't put Sin Cara on TV, because he's got to be the former Mystico, at least in Mexico, even if they don't acknowledge it up here. And they end up using Junico again.
People are going to wonder how I got this segue, but it's going to make sense here in a minute. ROH taped TV tonight, last night, Saturday night, for the new Sinclair show. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because, you know, if they go to Mexico, and this being WWE, and they've got a different man under the mask playing Sin Cara, you may have people chanting fraud, and you're going to have issues with the licensees and that sort of thing, or the So to me, it's like, okay, that is an issue down in Mexico. You're not going to obviously have people chanting fraud here in the U.S. and that sort of thing. But reason I bring this up, the reason I thought about that was because before CM Punk returned to WWE, that 1 week where he was teasing that he was going to leave and that sort of deal, and I said, you know, if he doesn't come back quick, ROH is going to run TV, and you're going to have people in Chicago chanting for CM Punk, expecting him to be there, and for no fault of your own, you're going to have a television show where people are chanting for a guy that you're not going to deliver. And he came back, and I thought, oh, well, there you go. Don't have to worry about that anymore. I was wrong. The fans were, in fact, chanting for CM Punk at the ROH tapings last night. Now, it was just very early on in the show, so I don't know if they could edit that out or what they're going to do, if they're going to mention it on commentary, maybe say, like, you know, CM Punk, former ROH champion, big star before he went to WWE. I don't know what they'll do, but it is interesting that there were apparently some fans that thought that CM Punk might show up in ROH in Chicago just the night before SummerSlam.
I tell you, even though I know we debated this and you said it would be defeating to ROH to do it, if there was a way you could have dragged this thing out and you actually dragged it out to the Survivor Series and had more of a plan or change plans with Punk, him showing up in ROH would not have been that big of a deal. And frankly, WWE reaching out and throwing a couple bucks to ROH to say use a couple guys every once in a while would never hurt my feelings either, because it's something that they definitely need to do. They need to do something, because guys, I mean, I know guys leave here and go to All Japan and places like that, but there's not really jobs there. And it's like, you know, it's too bad there's so many guys in WWE and in developmental. They need just somewhere else to work even a couple times, and that would be a great way to do it, even if you don't put them on TV.
But if you're going to use Punk, I don't know.
But the whole thing would have had to be, if Punk showed up on here, would have had to been still part of the WWE storyline and him playing outsider and you know, still bringing up, invoking the name Colt Cabana and stuff like that. And again, the Kings of Wrestling and all that sort of stuff that played into it, too. I mean, there's a way you could do it, but you had to plan for it and do it carefully. And obviously, Ring of Honor had to make sure they, you know, came out of it okay, too. But it wouldn't have been that bad of a robber. Or it would have been an interesting thing to do. And again, it's not like WWE's ever hesitated to say the words Ring of Honor on TV. They've done it, you know, tons of times, you know, over time. So it's something they could have worked, but they would have had to plan really well for it. And again, there's always, they were in Chicago, you know, that was not a risky move, but there were other places Ring of Honor could have run for TV tapings at first. I mean, it's not like Chicago has, you know, flooded back to them. In the last couple of years, it's gotten a little bit better in the past, you know, year or so. But you know, it was a risky move anyway to go there. And again, it's just because of CM Punk being their guy; they're in his hometown, and because of everything that's happened, they're going to chant stuff like that.
I just don't think that ROH wants to come across as a B show, a feeder system. You know, build your first tapings around a guy who's not going to be there in, you know, four shows from now.
Yeah, but you know what, Brian? Look, Nigel showed up. You get a little bit of a rub off of Punk just
but Nigel
around, and you actually have Cabana for a couple of shows. And again, I know Cabana and the Kings aren't under contract, or they weren't. They were like, I guess, per match deals. But with them around, you have Nigel coming out as a big surprise and going, you know, I don't know. You could do. there's things you could have done to still make yourself look good. And I got all the faith in the world in Cornette and the people that are there that they would actually know what they're doing to pull that off.
Yeah, but here's the deal. Here's the deal. Yes, Nigel did show up at the tapings last night. It was one of their two big announcements. He is now a color commentator for ROH television. The other big announcement being that the show will be available for free on ROHWrestling.com. So if you don't have a Sinclair outlet like I don't, you'll be able to watch the show every week for free. But with the Kings of Wrestling and Cabana, I mean, the Kings of Wrestling, for example, on the first set of tapings, they lost their match. You know, you can beat them on the way out of the territory, and then they go to the, you know, they go to WWE or whatever, and it's like, okay, well, you know, they lost here. They kept losing. You can't bring in CM Punk and have him lose. WWE is not going to let him come in and lose to anybody. So if he works, he's got to win, and then he's going to disappear.
Well, I didn't. Well, I mean, my idea of anything that went into it had nothing to do with him working. It was just him. I mean, just, you know, again, as far as Ring of Honor goes, just kind of painting the corners with him. As far as WWE goes, you could film some of that stuff and put it up and use it for your own reasons, and he could do it to do virally what he wanted to do with it. But as far as Ring of Honor goes, I mean, it's just a little dabble of CM Punk. He's not going to be the whole show or anything like that. I mean, that wouldn't have been my intention, you know, to take that much attention away from Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I just feel that if he actually would have showed up in Chicago, he would have been the only thing anyone cared about.
I don't know. I don't know.
He's the only thing anybody cared about on the
there inside that building for their first thing at TV tapings.
Well, actually, hold on. Let's go to a break. We'll talk about this when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and MMA, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. In about 20 minutes, as soon as this show goes off the air, Dave Meltzer will be doing live running play-by-play of SummerSlam on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. You can head up there, check out all of the results, all of the news from the show, who wins all of the championship matches, who wins all of the five matches on the show as of the time of recording this update. And then later on in the evening, Dave and I are going to be doing a brand new radio show exclusively for members of WrestlingObserver.com, talking all the matches, all the news from the weekend, of which there is quite an abundance. That's coming up later on this evening on the website, WrestlingObserver.com. And if you sign up, it's $10.99 a month. That's it, $10.99. No other fees. Not only do you get all of the brand new radio shows that we do, and we do between 15 and 20 new shows every single week between myself and all of the other hosts, including Mike Sempervivi, but you get our full archive of shows dating back to 2005. Over 3,000 programs are on the website right now for you to download and listen to. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling: Chris Jericho, Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Batista. We've had Lance Storm on every other week for years now. WWE writers we have on every year before WrestleMania. It's quite the list of shows we've got up there. Bruno Sammartino, the list goes on and on. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com, and if you want more, if this radio show every week is not enough for you, and if this show is not enough of a preview, head to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Just click the link. There's nothing else to do. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to give us our email, nothing like that. Just click the links, download them, listen to them. That is an example. That is three of the 3,000 shows we have available. And as noted, new shows every single day. If you love this radio show, Wrestling Observer Live, I guarantee that you will love a subscription. It's only $10.99. Sign up for a month. Try it. If you don't like it, in fact, if you don't like it, email me and we'll figure something out. But I think you'll love it. We've had a lot of people. They love this show. They signed up, and my God, were they happy. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, we were talking about CM Punk, ROH, the show in Chicago. Mike and I, not sure, well, disagreeing about whether or not it would have overtaken the entire show. My whole argument is that the ROH audience is a very, very hardcore wrestling audience, and the WWE audience is a hardcore audience, but also an audience filled with a lot of casual fans. And CM Punk, to took over the entire show at Money in the Bank. And the idea that he could do that to a WWE crowd, it would have been even bigger in front of a pure ROH crowd. I just think it would have overwhelmed the entire set of tapings.
There's more of a mob mentality, though, at WWE shows. I mean, it's like the Pavlov's response to Titantrons and music and things like that, whereas Ring of Honor, it wouldn't be so much because those people tend to try not to lose themselves in, you know, go out of their way too much, I think, in the current landscape. But, I mean, think about this now. If Punk went in there, and again, he wasn't going to dominate the show or anything, but say at the very beginning of that show, he's cutting a promo with the Kings of Wrestling, holding onto their tag belts, and, you know, let's just say them. So he goes out, and he's calling out the Kings of Wrestling as, you know, my guys, and you know, the guys who are like me, and they're facing the you know, Haas and Benjamin, and he draws an analogy to them to WWE, and you're just like Cena, and you're in here infecting my pool where I learned pro wrestling. And they go out and lose. And then you have the, you know, now the idea is, oh, God, so what are the Kings of Wrestling actually going to do? Are they going to be out here in the ether? Are they going to be part of Ring of Honor? Are they going to go with Punk to WWE? So you have something with them right off the bat right away. And, again, as, you know, the show goes on at the end. Say Punk squares off and he's eye-to-eye with Davey Richards or something like that, and he just, you know, the locker room empties out. They go to the ring. And he just kind of lays down the WWE title, and again, doesn't insult it or anything, but just cuts a promo saying, as much as this means to me, you know, talking about ROH is always going to mean more because this is where I learned, you know, pro wrestling. And, you know, cuts a promo like that, and the show ends with, you know, there's no shot of the WWE title because it's laying on the floor, and it's nothing but that locker room and that crowd that, you know, the blood of Ring of Honor comes from ECW in the aspect of they want, you know, it's something that to be passionate about, and a little group of people making it their own, and they're chanting ROH as the show goes off the air with those guys in the ring after odds are what was probably a pretty action-packed show. I think that could only help Ring of Honor, and again, there's good enough TV people there that can pull that off where that's an idea that probably could have worked.
Just feels to me like then you've got people expecting a Davey Richards CM Punk match that they'll never get.
No, but you know, well, yeah, I mean, anybody can jump to that conclusion. But then again, if you've already built Davey Richards up to something during the show, and again, you don't paint CM Punk as being the show. He cuts a promo at the beginning, maybe the Kings of Wrestling or something like that, maybe something backstage. But again, you're focusing on the other aspects when you're going to other segments of driving home the point of the guys that you have. I mean, again, it's almost like a guest star thing, not being the main star or anything like that. And again, if he goes out and does something like that at the end, I mean, yeah, of course everybody wants to see CM Punk against everybody. I want to see him take the belt and go to Japan and face Tanahashi, but, you know, that's not going to happen. And if they're that lost in you know, a wrestling bubble where that's going to upset somebody that much or think it's going to screw up Ring of Honor that much, I mean, I think they would be in the minority.
Well, you've also got the issue, on top of all booking issues, that at the beginning of the tapings, Jim Cornette came out and he did a promo, and he asked the fans to please not do any profane chants. And I think that if you were doing an angle where CM Punk he had left WWE and he was not going back, we have seen many times the former TNA worker who comes to ROH, and the fans have very unfriendly things to chant about TNA. And I can just see a night full of very unsavory chants about WWE and about John Cena, and that would also be a nightmare to have to clean up.
That actually is very, very true. Although, again, it's hard to control fans, and you'd figure Sinclair Broadcasting has been around a long time. There's enough people there who know how to do things with audio editing and such, because that's going to be a problem for them, period, going through, because they are on syndicated broadcast TV. And again, there's a lot that can air over broadcast TV overnights where a lot of times ROH is going to be played. But again, they still don't push the envelope when you're a network-affiliated station for any reason. So that's going to be something that's they're going to have to play with for the time that they're on the air, unless all of their audiences become that well-trained where everything they've learned over the last two decades in pro wrestling, you know, aren't going to apply.
Strikeforce Challengers ran on Friday night, and I promised to talk about this at the beginning of the show, the Ronda Rousey fight. Ronda Rousey is a bronze medalist in judo in the 2008 Olympics, and she's had five fights. She had three amateur fights. She had two pro fights. And in all five fights, she won her fight via armbar. And in all five fights, she won via armbar in less than 1 minute. She was facing Sara Dialelio, I believe is how you pronounce it, in the, we'll just call her Sara D, make life easier for me. Sara D in the, one of the matches on this show on the televised card. And the question was she going to use her finisher to beat Sara D in under 1 minute? And what happened was she tried a flying armbar virtually immediately, and within 25 seconds, Steve Mazzagatti called an end to the contest. Her sixth straight MMA victory, sixth straight armbar, sixth straight win in under 60 seconds. Now, the controversy was that Sara D did not tap out, but she did make a noise during the flying armbar, and there was a great deal of controversy about whether or not Steve Mazzagatti had blown this call. And as it turns out, they'd had the usual rules meeting, and they'd made it very clear that there did not have to be a tap for a submission. If you got put in a hold and you screamed, for example, the fight was going to be stopped. And a number of people who were there live in the building, including reporters at ringside, said that when Ronda put the armbar on Sara D, Sara D, in fact, did scream, and so it was the right call by Steve Mazzagatti. So, it is official, six straight wins, six armbars, six matches in under 60 seconds. This woman is something else.
A good-looking blonde girl who's got an Olympic medal, who's already got a signature finishing move. It's again, she's one of the reasons where it's like, God, I hope the UFC just, if they're just apathetic towards the women's fighting and the lack of depth in women's divisions, and they're just apathetic towards it instead of killing it. I mean, it's people like this girl who, again, really early in her career and everything, and she's got to be challenged in the whole nine yards, but, you know, what if she is the real deal, and what if she can do something with her, and I hopefully they keep things around because of people like her being in exciting fights and getting people behind them with, you know, the finishing moves. And again, six straight arm bars in less than a minute is pretty damn impressive.
Rowdy Ronda Rousey, which was in fact a nickname that she took from Rowdy Roddy Piper, for those wondering. And yeah, she's awesome. So check it out. Check her out online. It won't take long to watch all her fights. 6 minutes, in fact. So, actually, significantly less than 6 minutes. About 4 minutes to watch all of her matches. So, head up to, I don't know. I know there's some on YouTube. Probably some of the amateur fights you could check out. And she's got a website under construction. And I swear to God, today, I was online, and I can't remember what I was looking for, but I was looking up, maybe I was looking up a record or something like that. But this coming weekend, I believe it's next Saturday in California, so I should have stayed down in San Diego. In California, she is doing a seminar focusing on, of all things, the arm bar. Yeah.
Well, she would be the one to talk to about it.
She would be the one to talk to if you want to know how to do a great arm bar, because that is her finisher. More than anyone else has a finisher in mixed martial arts. Her finisher is a 1 minute arm bar.
And considering, I mean, don't forget about the judo medal, so she'll throw you.
I still like my idea that I talked about on one of our other shows about Ronda having the gimmick where she does the pre-fight promo saying, if you can last 1 minute with me, I'll give you $5,000. And then you've got a storyline.
She could be the female Kurt Angle.
Sure. Essentially kind of is.
And again, and I know how sexist this sounds, but, you know, because of Gina Carano, the way things have gone, and we talked about Merles Conan and Miesha Tate, these things go hand in hand, and again, because of how she looks and everything else, too, I mean, again, if you're UFC, I don't understand why you're in such a hurry or such a rush to dismiss women's divisions, and the fact that, you know, having, you know, these matches, you know, sprinkled in on cards, it's not a bad idea.
Well, the deal, and everybody brings this up, but this is what they claim, and I actually believe this. You know, one of the problems, I'm going to try and get this done in under a minute because we're running close to the break, but one of the problems with Strikeforce for a long time was they had no depth in any of their divisions. And that's why there was all this wacky booking. Like, you'd look at the booking of how they put things together and who got title shots and, you know, this guy's getting a title shot coming off no wins and this and that. It was, there was no depth. And that made it very, very hard to competently run a fighting organization. That's why for a long time, a lot of people just laughed at Strikeforce for their goofy booking. The thing with the women is, it's not that UFC is averse to women fighting. It's that they want to have more than like one division, and they don't believe that there are enough quality girls to have multiple divisions. And without enough people in the divisions, you end up with goofy, wacky booking, which they're not known for. We'll get Mike's thoughts on this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here for the final segment on the show. I want to give Mike a chance very quickly to talk about the women's divisions and UFC's desire to maybe have women's divisions if there were enough women.
Well, I understand the whole thing with divisions, and yeah, it would make more sense that way, but I think if you promote things like special attractions, I mean, this is a company that did sign Sean Gannon, right? They signed Kimbo Slice. They signed James Toney for an exhibition. It's not like, again, they don't have to do it as a gimmick thing like Strikeforce does, but when time comes to actually have a women's match, or the fact that if you're going to have like a UFC 133 type card where maybe you put this girl in and you go, hey, you know, Olympic gold medalist, you know, she finishes her fights quick, they put her in with somebody, it's just, you know, again, they want to have shows all over the world underneath the UFC name. They want to show every night somewhere in the world. Well, you know what? Women can fight too. And again, just because there's not a lot of great divisions, how is there ever really going to be as far as the interest goes unless, the, you know, it's promoted by the company? And again, women's MMA is going to continue to grow. We talked about it last week, regardless of whether the UFC promotes it or not, but it would really help the matters out. And rounding out divisions, if the UFC would actually take at least a little bit of interest in it. And again, I even though there's not great women's divisions, you don't have to promote title fights. You just promote fights. It's okay to see two women fighting, even though a division's not deep. I mean, Jesus Christ, if that was the case, then the heavyweights in the UFC would have never been on TV. If we were going with that same sort of logic, I mean, we would have never had the Sylvia, Arlovski, you know, that whole mirror, you know, before the motorcycle wreck, that kind of dead era when it came to UFC heavyweights when Pride was so strong. I mean, if you're going that mentality, it's the same thing.
We got to head out right now. We'll talk more about this next week because I got some observations from the clinic I went to. But we don't have time today. But in just a moment, we're going to have the Wrestling Observer, WrestlingObserver.com, live running play-by-play of the SummerSlam pay-per-view, which is coming up in mere moments. So check out the pay-per-view. Check out the play-by-play. Dave Meltzer and I up later on tonight with a brand-new radio show running down the event. So check that out as well, all at WrestlingObserver.com. We are out of here. We'll talk to you next week. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.